Okay, good evening, everyone. I know you just came here for the heat. Okay, Parshas Vayechi. Vayechi Yaakov Eretz Mitzrayim Shvaas Veshona. Parshas Vayechi begins. Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim Shvaas Veshona for 17 years. Vayhi Megakli Shnechayav. And the years of Yaakov were the days of his life, the years of his life. Shnechayav Sheva Shonim Ve'arboim Umas Shona. 147 years. Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim Shvaas Veshona. 17 years. This is a number which is not a coincidental number. You would not necessarily imagine that things that appear in the Torah are coincidence, but here we see something more specific, more poignant. Many Rishonim express it this way: Chizkuni, Rabbeinu Bachya. Mikra ze nichtav l'shvachay shol Yosef. This pasuk was written to praise Yosef. Shepirnes aviv v'chol beisai. He supported his father and his entire household, Yud Zayin Shana, 17 years. K'may shepirnes aviv. Like his father had supported him. Shayi ben Yud Zayin Shana hayu k'shenimka. Because he was 17 years old when he was sold. Here's the irony of this number, of this fascinating number. Yosef was 17 years old. Yosef ben Shvaas Reishono Hayora Yosef Havatzayin. That's the way Parshas Vayeshev, the whole story of the sale of Yosef, begins. They told Yosef is 17 years old. He's shepherding the sheep, and from there it goes downhill. He's sold to Mitzrayim. So 17 years Yosef spent with Yaakov Avinu, being taken care of by Yaakov Avinu as the ben zikunim, as the child who was doted over by Yaakov Avinu, and then they're torn apart by the sale of Yosef for a period of 22 years. And then Yaakov comes down to Mitzrayim. He's 130 years old when he comes down to Mitzrayim. And he's going to live to 147. At the beginning of this week's Parsha, he's 147. And we're going on very quickly towards Yaakov Avinu's death at this age of 147. So the first 17 years, Yosef was taken care of by Yaakov. These last 17 years, Yaakov was taken care of by Yosef. You could say it's a nice thing, it's a reward for Yaakov Avinu. If you read the Radak, earlier Rishon, he cites this Medrash, and his language is even a little bit sharper. What we're going to be discussing could be said just in the observation itself, and what was seen till now, but I want you to hear the language of Radak, which is very strong. Darshuvai, they interpreted, just like Yosef was, we would translate it in the lap of Yaakov Avinu for 17 years. So Yaakov was, so to speak, on the lap of Yosef for 17 years. The term b'chek means on the lap, the bosom. The idea was that he was held and brought up. A 17-year-old doesn't sit on the lap or something like that. It's a figure of speech. And likewise, the father doesn't do that. The child doesn't do that for the father. But there's a sharpness of expression here in the Radak, which I think brings out the point very strongly, that there's a symmetry. Yosef was taken care of by Yaakov. Yaakov was taken care of by Yosef. And it is really this which I want to talk to you about here. We're going to talk about the content of this first aliyah of Parshas Vayechi, but also what it to some degree helps bring out regarding the broader story of Yaakov and Yosef and what's happening here, what's coming to some degree to a climax here in this story. Yosef has the unique position of taking care of his father like this way for 17 years. Now, for us, this may not sound so incredibly unique. Sometimes that's the way the bell curve of life goes, and it starts off. It starts off parents taking care of children, and it can, as it approaches the end, it can have this kind of a change where children find themselves taking care of parents. At the same time, we don't have a sense at all of Yaakov Avinu being somehow, you know, handicapped, of limited, even though Chazal do tell us that it was specifically Yaakov, the first person that Hine Avicha Chayla, he was the one who became sick before he died, so that he would have time to give instructions and final words. It wouldn't come as a shock, his disappearance from the world. But that's year 17. That's what's happening here. When Yaakov came down to Mitzrayim, he was old, but he wasn't incapable. But nevertheless, the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu had this whole thing set up was that Yaakov would be taken care of by Yosef. That the original dream which Yosef had, dream number two, that his father and his mother, or the Ummah, the nation, as Rabban explains, that they would all come down, and there was such an indication of like a reversal. Yaakov said, I'm going to come and bow down to you to the ground? That seems kind of strange. That's not the way parent-child relationships are supposed to work. But indeed, to a certain degree, what happens here is also not that way. For these 17 years, Yosef is mechalkel, he supports, he takes care of his father and all of the family. And in a certain significant sense, he's playing the role of the Rosh HaMishpach, of the head of the family, of the provider for the family. And this is what it designs. And again, the symmetry of it. 17 years, Yosef is taken care of by Yaakov. 17 years, Yaakov is taken care of by Yosef is, you know, it's not just, one might say, just a measure for measure. He gets rewarded. He gets, you know, what goes around comes around. But there's something here which is trying to create a kind of balance between Yosef and Yaakov. A kind of balance between father and son. That's very unusual. It's not, again, just the standard, okay, at the end of life, somebody needs help, so their children step in, you know, hopefully, and are able to take care of them. There's a balance that is being created here between Yosef took care of Yaakov as much as Yaakov took care of Yosef. And in a certain sense, it's changing it from what might have been considered the normal parent-child structure of a relationship to be something different. The truth is that we have an explicit... I was about to say something that didn't make any sense. I was going to say we have an explicit hint to this. That doesn't make any sense at all. Okay, but we have a direct hint to this, which comes later in the parsha, when Yaakov Avinu is blessing his children, and when he blesses Yosef amongst the other Shvatim, and the pasuk says, "Vateisha beis anchashtei vayefaisus rei adov." This is Memtes Chav Dalet 49:24. Midei avir Yaakov misham roe even Yisrael, from the hands of the strong one of Yaakov. From there, roe was the shepherd of Even Yisrael, of the stone of Yisrael. What does this mean, Even Yisrael? Says Rashi, Loshon Noitrikain Avu Ben. Even, the word Even, is Avu Ben, father and son. Father and son. Misham Roye Even Yisrael. And this is a description of Yosef's position, that he was Roye Even Yisrael. Now, what does that mean? Avon Ubanov, says Rashi. Yaakov Ubanov. He shepherded, he took care of both the father, Yaakov, and his sons, and Yaakov's other sons. Yosef took care of everybody. One might read into this, Av Ben Even Yisrael, is that, in a certain sense, Yaakov himself, he had the role of being the Av, relative to Yosef, and in a certain sense, Yosef took care of him. You know, remember that language of the Radak. It was like Yaakov was on Yosef's lap for all of those years. The language of the Pasuk, Yosef Yoshis Yodoy Aleinecha, Yosef will place his hands over your eyes. Now, if you remember it from last week's Parsha, where Yaakov was told, okay, go down to Mitzrayim, you'll go to Yosef, and Yosef will place his hand over your eyes. What does it mean? Yosef will place his hand over your eyes. We have all kinds of symbolic meanings to that. Maybe it means that he'll die and his eyes will be closed by his son in death, as is normal that we close the eyes of one who passes away. Maybe it's an allusion to the covering of the eyes. Yaakov said Kriya Shema when he came down to Mitzrayim. What's the simple meaning of the verse? The simple meaning of the verse is Yosef will take complete and total care of you. He'll place his hand over your eyes, meaning you won't have to look out for yourself. He'll take care of you. Similar to what we find in the beginning of last week's Parsha, where the Rishonim discuss, Yehuda says, you said to us about Binyamin, bring him here, v'asima eini alav, and I'm going to put my eyes on him. I'm going to lay my eyes on him. What does that mean? And Rashi, what's this? Look what you did to him. That's what you call laying your eyes on him. So the Rishonim explain that v'asima eini alav means, I'm going to look out for him. Bring him here. Don't worry, I'll take care of him. You're worried about Binyamin coming. That was why he was the one who stayed home originally. Bring him here. I will put my eye on him. Or as we say in English, I will keep an eye on him. I'll keep an eye on him. And Yaakov Avinu was told, go down to Mitzrayim. Yosef will tell you, you can close your eyes. You don't have to watch out for yourself. I'll take care of everything. Right? Imagine how you have to travel someplace. I said, I've got to drive the whole way. And somebody says, do me a favor. I'm going there. Sit in the back. Close your eyes. Relax. What do they say? Leave the driving to us. Right? And take it easy. I'm taking care of you. This is the mamar of Yaakov. I'm at this point, I think I'm getting repetitive. Right? But the idea is that Yaakov Avinu is shifting position from being the caretaker father, the leader father, to in a great sense being the follower father. Av to ben, even. From av to ben, this is a significant sense of what's shifting here. Let's find it one more step right here in the beginning of the parsha. As Yaakov Avinu is getting close to dying, so he calls his son Yosef and he says, oh, if I could only find favor in your eyes, please promise me that you'll take me and you'll bury me there in Eretz Kenan, v'shachavtiyim avisayim, v'sasarim imitshayim, v'kvartani bikurasam. I'll die. You'll carry me from Mitzrayim. You'll bury me where my forefathers are buried. And Yosef says, I'll do what you ask. I'll do what you say. Swear to me. He swears to him, v'yishtachu Yisrael al reish hamita. And Yaakov, you know, bows down at the head of the bed. What's he bowing down? To whom is he bowing down? Why is he bowing down? Says Rashi, Tala b'idna sogidle. A fox, when it's its day, bow down to it. What does that mean? A fox is not king of the beasts. A fox is, in fact, peasant of the beasts. In the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, it speaks about the contrast between the lion and the fox. It says it would be better to be a zon of la'arayis, a tail of a lion, rather than being a roish l'shualim, rather than a head of foxes. The lion is the top, the fox is the bottom. The lion is king of the beasts. But be'idna, but when it's its time, when it's the time that the fox rules, whatever circumstances bring to that, you have to bow down to it. That's an expression that Rashi quotes here. In other words, Yaakov was bowing down to Yosef. He was bowing down to Yosef because at this point, Yosef was on top. Here, it speaks literally about bowing. We have the same idea expressed by Rashi, not literally about bowing, just a couple of sukkim later, when it says, Yosef is told, Avicha Chayla, your father's sick, and Yosef goes on his own, and he takes Menashe and Ephraim, and he goes to Yaakov Avinu. And Yaakov hears that Yosef is coming, and the pasuk says, "Vayischazek Yisrael, vayeshev al hamita." Yaakov strengthened himself, and he sat up in the bed. Says Rashi, "Afal pishu b'ni," he said to himself, "Even though he's my son, melechu, he's the king. Vachalik lekoved, I have to give him honor. Mikan shecholken koved l'malchus." From here, you see that whether you voted for him or not, you have to give honor to the king. Cholken kovid lemalchus. That's what we see from here. So we have here a consistent pattern. He sat up for him. or he bowed down to him, but there was a recognition of Yosef's special position.
Is there somewhere it says that he was bound because he saw the Shekhinah just before that?
The Rashi continues and says that he was bowing towards the Shekhinah. He brings other interpretations. I'm telling the first pshat of Rashi, you're correct. That's how Rashi continues. The first pshat of Rashi is that he was bowing down to Yosef HaTzadik. In fact, one can say that this pasuk is the fulfillment of the dream of Yosef HaTzadik. Because if you recall, we have this little gap which is left. He had dream number one that the 11 brothers would bow down to him. That was fulfilled pretty quickly when the brothers came down for grain. But dream number two was that the sun and the moon and the stars representing Yaakov and his family would come and bow down. Yaakov came, but did they come and bow down? So there are all kinds of theories about what this means. How did he end up? Did he really end up bowing down to him? Was it a literal bowing down? Some understand in last week's parsha when he met Yosef HaTzadik, there was a moment where he didn't quite know who he was. He sees this king kind of person in front of him and he bowed down before he had a chance, Yenis and Ben Uziel. But here we have explicitly Yaakov bowing down to Yosef. The simple pshat in the pasuk, Vayishtachu Yisrael Areish Amita, Yaakov is bowing down here in the presence of Yosef. This is the fulfillment of the dream, which has Yaakov being deferential to Yosef. And even here where he's asking to be buried, we find throughout Yitzchak and Yishmael buried Avram Avinu in the Moras HaMachpelah. Yaakov and Esav buried Yitzchak Avinu in the Moras HaMachpelah. They never asked. I mean, the Pasuk doesn't tell you that they asked. They sort of just, I guess, they figured it out. Okay, the mother was buried there. The father's going to be buried there, going to be buried there with her. Yaakov Avinu, he has to make a special request of Yosef HaTzadik. And he asks him to do this, and especially to Yosef. And, you know, Yaakov Avinu will say it also to the Shvatim, you know, later in the Parsha. But you know, fundamentally, this is a Shvuah, which he's mashpia to Yosef HaTzadik. He's far away, and all the pressures that would be involved, we know from Chazal. But then again, here explicitly, again, he's turning to Yosef, and he's asking Yosef HaTzadik for his help. So we've established this, and we're gonna put this now, you know, down as something that we see here and accept. There is this reversal of positions between Yaakov and Yosef that occurs here at this stage of the game, at this part of the story. And we have to understand why it is that they have this special change, well, this unique change in the relationship which exists between Yosef and Yaakov. So I'm going to try to explain it to you by looking a little bit further. The explanation is going to come, you're going to need to come from far afield. In other words, from the broader picture of the whole Yaakov-Yosef dynamic. However, we're going to try to bring it out by looking a little bit further here in the first Aliyah at a very enigmatic piece which comes along here as we go further in the Parsha that I'm going to ask you to think about. Okay, so the first deal is done. Yosef commits, he's going to take Yaakov to bury him back there. Vayhi achar advarim ha'ila, was after this, and Yosef is told, Hinei avicha chayla, your father is sick. And he took his two sons with him, Menashe and Ephraim. And he told Yaakov, whoever it was who told him, he said, your son Yosef is coming. And Yisrael strengthened himself and he sat up. And Yaakov said to Yosef, Kel Shakai, God appeared to me in Luz and he blessed me. And he said, I'm going to make you fruitful and many. I'm going to make you into a community of nations. I'm going to give this land to your children after you as a permanent holding. And now, Biata, and now, Shnei Vanecha Neiladim L'cha Be'eretz Mitzrayim, your two sons that were born to you in the land of Egypt, Abaye Lecha, before I had come to you to Mitzrayim, Lihem, they are mine. Ephraim and Menashe, Kiruvein and Shimon Yuli, Ephraim and Menashe should be for me like Ruvein and Shimon. Your children that you had before I came here should be like mine. The children that you have afterwards, if you should have children afterwards, we shine and point out, we don't find that Yosef had any children besides Menashe and Ephraim. L'chayu, those will be considered yours. Al shem acheihem yikaru b'nachlasa. Their name for their inheritance will be together with Menashe and Ephraim. In other words, they won't carve themselves out as separate groups. What does this mean? Yaakov Avinu is giving Yosef a special gift. The gift is the gift of Bechira, the gift of the birthright. Yosef HaTzadik is going to have a double portion. His two sons, Menashe and Ephraim, each get a portion of the land, which doubles, whether quantitatively or qualitatively, a machlokes between Ramban and Rashi. But on some level, there was a portion of Menashe and a portion of Ephraim, and that means that they stood as two shvatim. So there was Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, Menashe, Ephraim, and Binyamin. Which means that Menashe and Ephraim were like Reuven and Shimon. They were on that list. It wasn't like a family tree with 12 across, and then go down the next tier, and Ephraim and Menashe were on the next tier. Ephraim and Menashe were moved up. In fact, they took the place of Yosef, and they were on the same tier as Reuven and Shimon, as the other children. That was the special thing which was designated here that Yaakov Avinu says to Yosef. Kadosh Baruch Hu promised me, make me into this community of nations. I'm including Ephraim and Menashe in that community of nations. Rashi explains that there were children that were, you know, who else was going to be born? There was this promise of children being born. Who else was there? There was only Binyamin left, but he promised him many. So it must be Ephraim and Menashe. Keruvein v'shimon yuli. Now, many say, many understand, you know, appropriately, that this is the granting of the Bechira, of the birthright to Yosef. Because what does a Bechira get? A double portion. And this way Yosef got a double portion because his two sons each took a portion equal to the portion of the others. And this was the transfer of the Bechira, of the birthright, from Reuven to Yosef. And that that would be the expression of what we have here, which is nice and good and certainly correct. This is the Shechem Achar Alachecha, the extra portion. But listen to how the pasuk continues. Vani bevalimi Padan, and I, when I was returning from Padan, from Aram, from where I had been to marry your mother and have you and have your brothers, Meso olai Rochel. Rochel died on me, Ve'eretz Kenan, Baderech, on the road, Ve'ipkir Aseres Lavay Ephrasa, while there was still some distance to come to Ephras. Ve'ekbereh Hashem Ederech Ephras, and I buried her there on the road to Ephras, which is Beis Lechem. So I buried her there. She died there, and I buried her there. Why is Yaakov Avinu saying this? Right, the next words, and yeah, Yisrael sees the children of Yosef. He says, "Who are these? Mi'ela? These are my children that God gave me. Bazeh. What does it mean, bazeh? Simple pshat in the pasuk is hacha, as the Targum says, that Hashem gave me here. These are the children that you mentioned before, the children that I have in Eretz Mitzrayim. These are the children that I had here. And Yaakov Avinu says, bring them to me, v'avorachem, and I will bless them. Now, in a certain sense, of course, here again, Menashe and Ephraim are getting special treatment. Do we ever find Yaakov blessing any of his other grandchildren? No. It's in this pasuk that he is saying, they're like me. And he brings them to him, and he benches them like his own. Interestingly, when it comes time to bench Reuven and Shimon and everybody else, Menashe and Ephraim aren't mentioned specially. He gives a bracha to Yosef along with everybody else. This is sort of like off the record. This is how they had it. And maybe one might suggest this is a partial fulfillment of what Yaakov Avinu said, the children that you had ad boi elecha Mitzrayimah, before I came to you to Mitzrayim. Once you're here, once I'm here with you, and I'm here with everybody else, I'm not giving special treatment to these you over anybody else. But when I wasn't here yet, those children have a special position. Here I'm speaking to Menashe and Ephraim, not in front of everybody else. Special position. Yaakov Avinu perhaps is no longer treating Yosef differently in front of all the brothers. But we'll see perhaps that there's something more to this than that. Okay, but that takes us to Sheni. But I want to come back to the pasuk which sticks out like a sore thumb. Because Yosef comes with Menashe and Ephraim. Yaakov Avinu says, oh, I have a great surprise for you. Menashe and Ephraim, we're going to be special. We're going to be different than everybody else. Yaakov gets introduced to Menashe and Ephraim, and he prepares to give them a special bracha. But in the middle, Yaakov says to Yosef, you know, when I was coming back from Padan Aram, your mother Rachel died, Rachel died, and I buried her along the way. Kederach Efras, which was the way to Beis Lech. Why is he saying that here? Rashi addresses it, but it's tremendously enigmatic. Rashi says, "V'afal pi shani matriach alecha lo helichani li kaver beretz Kenan." He says, you know, I told you, you need to go and schlep me back to Eretz Kenan to bury me when my time comes. V'loy kach asisi limcha. But the truth is, I didn't do that to your mother. Sheri samach lebeis lechem mesa. She died close to Beis Lechem. And I buried her right there. I didn't take her to Hebron. And by the way, Beis Lechem is a lot closer to Hebron than Mitzrayim is to Hebron. Right? If you go to Eretz Yisrael now, if you want to go to Hebron, they usually, like, the bus stops in Beis Lechem, right? It stops in Kever Rochel and takes you to Moraz HaMachpelet. Close. I mean, not next door, but it's close. So why am I bothering you to take me there? Says Rashi. A real medrash. Says Rashi, Yadati sheyesh belibchala, I know that you are wondering about this, you have this in your heart, so to speak, against me, but know that I put her there, she should be able to be on the road to help her children, to help her descendants in the future when they're going into Golos. Rachel will come out and she will cry over them, and that will be the saving grace for the Jewish people when they go into Golos. So, let's say Rashi's answer is midrashic. And there's a simpler answer. You know, we were traveling, and I couldn't just turn around and start taking her to Hebron. I had the children. We were traveling back this way. Other Rishonim understand how he's explaining himself, why he didn't bury her in Hebron. But I still don't understand. Why is he saying it to him now? This is a separate event. The first paragraph of the parsha is where Yaakov turned to Yosef and said, could you please bury me in Eretz Kanan? Yosef said, yes. He didn't ask any questions. He didn't say, yeah, bad dad, but why are you asking me to do that if you didn't do that to our mother? And explain right then and there why he's asking him to take him back. Not at all. It's in a separate story when Yaakov becomes sick and Yosef goes with Menashe and Ephraim. And now Yaakov Avinu finds it necessary to address this nagging question. It's hard to understand. It's hard to understand. So, what I'd like to suggest to you, I mean, Rashi tells us a pshat. It's maybe the simple pshat in the pasuk. Maybe Yosef promised him right away. He didn't want to hesitate at all. And then Yaakov said, you know, you probably went home and you have this nagging thought, and I want to just address it. Could be. I want to suggest to you something. It's a little bit more elaborate. It's a little bit more elaborate, but I think it's important and valuable for us to understand here in the context of the question or the issue which we posed at the beginning, which is the special position which Yosef now adopts to some degree to be in a father-like position relative to Yaakov. And before we'll talk about Rachel, let's just notice that the same thing is happening right here. Because what Yaakov Avinu is doing is he's making it that Yosef has two sons that are equal to Yaakov's own sons. They're like Reuven and Shimon. Now, we can view that as a promotion to Ephraim and Menashe. But in a certain sense, what that means? That means that Yosef is the father of Shvatim. Nobody else, none of the other children of Yaakov, you know, are fathers of Shvatim. He's like Yaakov, he's an Av. Yosef is an Av. He's the fourth Av because his children are on the same tier, on the same level as Yaakov Avinu's children. It's not that from there it goes down as you would have the grandchildren, which is a completely different level. Menashe and Ephraim are Shvatim. And so this is also an acknowledgement or an expression of the fact that Yosef is not just a child to Yaakov Avinu. Again, he doesn't have to be a father to Yaakov Avinu in order to Hashvat him. He just has to be an equal to Yaakov Avinu. But the parity, 17 years, that's created, makes Yosef to some degree able to be a father of Shvatim. Not just a Bechar that gets divided up into, gets a double portion, but to some degree, a father of Shvatim. So let's try to explain this and understand this a little bit better. Yaakov Avinu was born together with Esav HaRasha. They were twins, Yaakov and Esav. And there were difficulties that emerged between Yaakov and Esav from the beginning. And Yaakov is urged, and to some degree puts himself in such a position, and to some degree is pushed by his mother into the position to claim strength over Esav HaRasha. Doesn't go so easily. Doesn't go so smoothly. He has to buy. He has to trick. Even after he does it all, he doesn't seem to do it all. If you recall, in the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach, we've pointed out many times, Yaakov Avinu says, "Im lovan garti v'echaradota v'hilishar v'chamor tzayin v'eved v'shivcha." Yaakov Avinu describes exactly what he's been up to for all of these years, and he says, none of what my father blessed me with has come true. None. It's an amazing statement of Yaakov Avinu. My father said, Hashem should give me from the dew of the heavens and the fat of the land. I have livestock. I have sheep and I have cattle. I don't have any real estate. I've been wandering around for these years as a shepherd. Yavducha Amim, nations will serve you, kingdoms will bow down to you. Again, like I've been around the world. Nobody's bowing down to me. I was again living out of Lavan's house. You'll be a master over your brother. Yaakov says all of this in a speech where he starts off and he says, so you shall tell my master Esav, so says your servant Yaakov. So Rashi says, with all this, it's not worth it for you to be losing sleep over the fact that I took the brachas, because the brachas haven't come true. Why should you be bent out of shape? The brachas didn't come true. That's what Yaakov Avinu says to Esav. And it's a remarkable statement. It's really a shame that Yaakov Avinu should have done all that lying and cheating not to get anything. Why did Rivka have him go? I mean, we wouldn't be surprised that wouldn't come true, of course, because we say, he didn't mean to give it to him. How could a bracha come true when it's sent to the wrong address? But for some reason, Rivka didn't think of that. And Yaakov didn't think of that when he went there. So it was really a waste of time? No, it wasn't a waste of time. But Yaakov points out accurately that none of it had come true. Yaakov points out accurately that none of it had come true. It's true that none of it had come true for Yaakov Avinu at that point in time. Let's jump ahead one generation, though, and look at Yosef HaTzadik. And you look at Yosef HaTzadik, and you see, V'yitim l'ha Hashem, l'kim ital l'shmayim shvayin arz, Hashem will bless you with the dew of the heavens, the fat of the land, grain and grapes, agricultural success. Who was that? Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef HaTzadik was in charge of all the grain of Mitzrayim. You might ask where he got grapes. We never find him having grapes, right? But who was indebted to Yosef HaTzadik?
Oh, yeah.
The butler, right? The dogon, the siresh, is the baker and the butler. The grain and the grapes are the baker and the butler. They're put under Yosef's control in the jail. The baker disappears. Yosef maybe takes his place because the baker wasn't a French guy with a big white hat and an apron. He was the Sar Ha'efim. He was the minister of the things. Maybe when Yosef became charge of all the grain and all the bread of Mitzrayim, he was taking his place. Maybe not, you decide. But the butler was indebted to Yosef. He was in Yosef's charge in the jail, and when he came out, you know, he was indebted to him. He was stuck. He had to, in a certain sense, bring up Yosef at the end. Kingdoms will bow down to you. Nations will serve you. Yosef? You will be a master over your brothers. All of those brachas came through to Yosef. And don't say, wow, so clever. How did he make that up? I didn't make that up. Yaakov Avinu said it explicitly in the brachas that he gave to Yosef, which we cited earlier in this week's parsha, at the end of the parsha. He says, Birchais Avicha Gavru al Birchais Hayrai. The brachas of your father went beyond the brachas of his parent, of my parents, meaning my brother. Tiena l'rosh Yosef, those brachas come on the head of Yosef. The brachas that I got go to Yosef. They went to Yosef. Yosef got them all. And if that pasuk sounds familiar, maybe it should, maybe it doesn't. Many people don't say this, especially women wouldn't say it, maybe. But at the end of Mariv on Motzei Shabbos, and some people say it at home before Havdalah, we have what are called the Psukei Bracha, Psukim of Blessing, that it's accustomed to say on Matzah Shabbos. You'll see it in the bench, V'yitin Lecha. It starts with V'yitin Lecha. V'yitin Lecha Elokim Ital Hashemayim Shemein Haaretz, which is the Bracha which I just referenced before, which Yitzchak gave to Yaakov. And then, the way it's written in the Siddur, then it goes on to the next Bracha that Yitzchak gave to Yaakov when he knew who he was. And then, it quotes this Bracha of Yosef HaTzadik that Yaakov gave to Yosef, saying, these brachas go to you. So Yosef was correct when he looked at Esav and he said, those brachas didn't come true. But what he didn't tell him was, they didn't come through yet, but I didn't waste my time. It's just they haven't come true yet. And therefore you don't have to be frustrated because I didn't get in the way of your life. But down the line, they will come to me, but you won't be around to feel it. Yosef will have it. Yosef got the brachas that were given to Yaakov. And therefore Yosef is the one which Chazal say gave Yaakov Avinu the confidence to go back and face Esav. Remember, what does the pasuk say? It was when Rachel gave birth to Yosef and Yaakov turned to Lavan and he said, let me go back to my land and to my place. Says Rashi, why when Rachel gave birth to Yosef does he say this? Because until Rachel gave birth to Yosef, Yaakov was nervous. How can I go back to Yaakov? How can I go back and face Esav? But now that I have Yosef with me, I can do it. Because as the Navi Ovadia said, Vohya beis Yaakov eish, uveis Yosef lahava, uveis Esav lakash. Yaakov will be the fire, Yosef will be the flame, and Esav will be the straw. With the flame of Yosef, you don't have to worry about the straw man, about the straw house of Esav. It will all be gone. Yaakov can't stand up to Esav, but Yosef can stand up to Esav. There you go. So you could start to hear that Yaakov Avinu would say, hey, you know, Yosef plays a very important role for me, and I have to somehow give Yosef the front seat. But I want to suggest to you that it's deeper than that and goes beyond that. And the truth is that perhaps it didn't have to be Yosef. It could have been Yaakov. But it couldn't have been the Yaakov just with the life experience that had him standing in front of Yitzchak and getting the bracha. In order for Yaakov to be able to have those brachas to overcome Esav, he needed something that he would only get he connected himself to Rachel Imenu. He would only have it when he connected himself to Rachel Imenu. It was going to be through Rachel Imenu that Yaakov Avinu would be able to triumph over Esav. Now again, I'm not making this up either. Chazal say that the children of Esav fall to the children of Rachel. And whether it is Binyamin's descendant Mordechai who defeats Haman, whether it's Yahushua who fights the war against Amalek, or again this readiness of Yosef to overcome. But the children of Esav fall in the hands of the children of Rachel. So it's Rachel that does it. But there's two ways that Rachel could do it. Rachel can do it by bringing something that changes and affects Yaakov Avinu himself. Where Yaakov Avinu himself, through the midah, through the strength of Rachel, the specific strength which Rachel has and brings to bear, that could somehow affect Yaakov Avinu and bring out in Yaakov, you know, a new dimension that didn't previously exist. And that would make Yaakov able to triumph over Esav. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that, okay, Rachel's not going to be able to change Yaakov, but if you take half a cup of Yaakov and half a cup of Rachel and you mix them together, then you end up with a child who's going to be a combination of Yaakov and Rachel. And that child will be able to triumph. So you understand there's two ways that you can mix together Yaakov and Rachel. One way is that the two of them come together and produce a child. And the second way is that the two of them come together and produce each other. They change each other. That it's a blending of people. And again, those of you who have hung around here for a while, we'll recall that this is a distinction which we always discuss when we speak about the relationship between Yaakov and Rachel versus the relationship between Yaakov and Leah. Because we always look back at the Rashi and the Ramban in the beginning of the Chumash, where the first couple is created. And it says that when Adam was given Chava, when Chava was created, it says that henceforth a man will leave his father and mother and attach himself to his wife, and they become like one. And Rashi says, what does it mean that they become like one? You take a half a cup of the father, you take a half a cup of the mother, and you mix them together and they produce a child, and the child is a combination of the father and the mother. To which the Ramban says, that's very true, except I have a problem. That's not human. That's not uniquely human. That's true for horses and giraffes. There also you take a part of the father, you take part of the mother, you put them together, become like one. The pasuk here is describing the unique creation and connection that's there in a human relationship. Says the Ramban, what it means is that the father and mother forge a relationship between the two of them. And the two of them become like one. Even without the biological fusion of the two of them in a child, just the two of them, the way they relate to each other, forge a unity and a connection that they become like one. And we've explained many times that when Yaakov Avinu encountered Rachel, he felt an immediate connection with her. He felt an immediate connection with her. When Yaakov Avinu encountered Leah, he felt no connection with her. So what did Hashem do? He said he gave her children. And the relationship was forged by joint investment rather than by connection between the two of them. And it's two different models, two different types of connection. So it could be that it's the combination of Yaakov and Rachel that comes out in the children, in Yosef, in Binyamin, that produces the magic mix to overcome Esav. But maybe that's plan B. And plan A is that Yaakov himself, by virtue of his relationship with Rachel, would gain the strength that Rachel brings to Yaakov Avinu that would enable him to triumph over Esav. Now let's make this from an abstraction into something a little bit more concrete. Here it is. Yaakov Avinu. Okay, I want you to picture Yaakov Avinu in your mind. Okay? Yitzchak and Rivka have babies. Esav comes out, and he's also, he's like made, he's hairy, developed like that, very male. And Yaakov comes out, and he's a quiet fellow, sits in the tent, in the Beis Medrash. Okay. Probably very pale complexion, not enough vitamin D. And he's an ishchalak. He's smooth. He doesn't have a lot of hair. Okay. And he's thinking, he goes in to steal the brachas, right? And he can't even fake a deep voice like Esav. Can't be rough. And he's got to put on goat's hair on his arms so that Yaakov or Yitzchak will think that he's Esav. Yitzchak will think that he is Esav. Fine. So he pulls it off. And then he's off to Aram to get away from Esav because he's scared like anything of Esav. He comes there. And look what happens. He comes to this place. And there are a bunch of shepherds and they're hanging around a well. Now, first of all, Yaakov, who's like on the run, like running away from Esav, he goes over to his people at the well. He says, "What are you guys doing sitting around here? Shouldn't you be working?" Which is a little out of character. Okay, but then, get this, they say, no, we have to sit here because it takes a whole bunch of us to be able to get this rock off of the top of the well. So we're waiting for everybody to come. Yaakov says, "Is that a rock?" He goes over, right, he flicks it. Rashi says, like taking a jar lid off, like mavir sapikak me'al achavis, like popping off a little plug in a jar, and it's gone. Yaakov Avinu. Is this Yaakov Avinu? Is this the pale yeshiva bacher that we read about before? Was on the run from Esav. What happened?
Didn't he see Rachel?
That's what happened.
That's what happened.
What happened was he saw Rachel. That's the piece. The piece is that it was when Yaakov Avinu saw Rachel. That's what the pasuk says explicitly. Vayikash ro Yaakov es Rachel. Right? That's when it changed. Rachel brought something into Yaakov Avinu. And that was the kind of something that demands respect, that is power and strength in the physical world, that imposes on others, why aren't you doing the work that you're supposed to be doing? That was brought out in Yaakov Avinu. Did it last? Did it stay with Yaakov Avinu? If it stayed with Yaakov Avinu, then we would expect that Yaakov and Rachel would have a strong connection, a bond that would stay with them forever. But they didn't. The sad truth, as you know, is that Rachel was not forever with Yaakov Avinu. And the greatest sign of that is the fact that in the cave of Machpelah, the cave of the couples, Yaakov lies there forever with Leah, not with Rachel. Rachel's alone. She has her own place. But Derech on the road. She's not with Yaakov forever. So somehow that connection between Yaakov and Rachel as such, it's not so strong. And where's Rachel buried? She's buried where she had her child, where she had her last child, where she died as soon as she had her last child. Because her connection with Yaakov Avinu was going to be producing these children with him. Once the child was created, Havali Bonim Yimayim Meisanechi, once the last child was created, she was done. And that's what Yaakov Avinu was explaining to Yosef. What we're suggesting here is the following. To now drive back into the beginning of the picture. The shleimus, the completeness of Klal Yisrael, is supposed to come through Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And it does. Avram Avinu gives us Chesed LeAvram, and Yitzchak Avinu gives us Yira, Gura. The strength of Yitzchak and Yaakov Avinu gives us Emes, the synthesis of the two. However, we know that there's still something missing. The Yaakov Avinu that has only Eilam Haba and forfeits Eilam Hazeh to Esav, forfeits this world to Esav HaRasha, and lets Esav triumph in this world. The Yaakov Avinu who has the name Yaakov because it's only in the end that he will prevail. But in the interim, you know, he to some degree loses. The Yaakov Avinu who looks at life on this world and says, Ma'at v'royim hoi yumei shnei chayai, life on this world is not, it doesn't work well, it's bad. There's an aspect of the mastery of this world represented by mamish, the earth itself, the physical, the agriculture, which is the earthy part, not the stuff that floats above the earth, not the shepherd who's sort of like not really connected to the earth. But the mastery of the earth itself that Yaakov Avinu didn't claim, and that is necessary. That is a necessary part of what's going to be needed for the Jewish people to be able to exist and to be strong in the world. And Yosef is going to provide that. He's going to provide that because Yaakov Avinu himself didn't provide it. Yaakov Avinu wasn't expected to provide it by birth. But he was perhaps given the opportunity to provide it when Rachel would be his mate. And just like Avram and Sarah, mamish, they learned from each other. And Avram developed Yirat Shamayim in his relationship with Sarah. And Sarah developed genuine tzchik and laughter and giving through a relationship with Avram. Well, Yaakov and Rachel could have had this sort of cross-pollination, but it didn't happen. It didn't happen. Meisa alai Rachel baderach. She died, she said, because of the gaps between us. We've at other times explained this idea as well, and we've explained it. Look what formed the gap. For example, why did Rachel die on the way?
She stole the
trophim. She stole the trophim, the idols, or whatever it was, the charms of Lavan. And Yaakov Avinu is chased after by Lavan. He said, why did you steal those things from me? And Yaakov Avinu said, I didn't steal those things from you. Whoever stole those things should die. Nobody in my house would do something like that. We are honest people. We are true people. So why did Rachel steal it? She was dishonest. So Chazal tells, you know why Rachel stole it? Because she said, I want my father to stop being involved in those Danishkeiten. I want to separate my father from Avodah Zarah. I don't want this. I don't want to melt it down and use the silver to make myself a nice leichter for Shabbos. I want to just separate him from it. No, nice, right? And Yaakov didn't think of that. Yaakov didn't think, maybe somebody stole it from him. Not to steal, but to get rid of the Avodah Zarah. And we note that, you know, there was a man named Eliezer. Remember him? He came to the house of Lavan and Bethuel. And what happened? Lavan came running out. He says, could you come and stay with us tonight? And don't worry, I got rid of all the Avodah Zarah. so you can feel free to come and stay with us tonight. Right? A generation later, Yaakov Avinu shows up, and what does he do? He lives with Lavan for 20 years. Did Lavan ever get rid of the Avodah Zarah? No. Not once. So on the way out, Lavan's daughter says to herself, well, we've lived here 20 years with this Avodah Zarah in the house. If not now, when? Let's get rid of the Avodah Zarah. Yaakov Avinu doesn't even think of it. Why? In this world, you know, nice guys finish last. He was my bubble bus. He had a very desire. What am I supposed to say something about it? You understand? That's the gap between Yaakov and Rachel. That's the gap between Yaakov and Yosef. Yosef HaTzadik tells the Mitzrayim, you want food? I'm happy to feed you. I just need you all to have a bris milah. And then I'll feed you. Wasn't shy about imposing that which was true and pure and so on and so forth when given the opportunity. But Yaakov was far from that himself. Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim 17 years. Yaakov bows down to Yosef. Yaakov took care of Yosef for 17 years, and Yosef took care of Yaakov for 17 years. Because in a certain sense, Yosef isn't just a continuation. He's not just a child of Yaakov Avinu. He's filling in what Yaakov Avinu himself perhaps could have done. Instead of Yaakov Avinu being the synthesis of himself with Rachel, Yosef, the next generation, is necessarily the synthesis of Yaakov and Rachel, but it has to be bumped up. That's an avhus. That's a role of an av that has to exist there for the Jewish people, that Yosef HaTzadik is providing. The fact that they change positions is not al-chinam. It's not small. It's not small. What we derive from this, you know, I would think, it ends up being sort of like a funny combination. So can you understand? That's why his children end up being, you know, equal to the Shiftei Kah. This is to some degree the thing, and that becomes also even like the expression of his bechira, of his birthright. When the Torah says you can't, when it teaches the parsha of the birthright, it says if a person has two wives, one who's loved and one who's hated, and the firstborn child is from the one who's hated, you can't turn around and give the bechira to the child of the one who you love. Right, those are the exact terms of Rachel and Leah. Right? And right here, Yosef HaTzadik is being given the birthright. Right? It's all entering into the same dynamic of the Yaakov Rachel versus Yaakov Yosef sort of situation, the sort of relationship. And Yaakov Avinu says to some degree, he says, the two children who are born here in Mitzrayim, before I come here, because in a certain sense, yes, there's the irony. Yosef starts taking care of Yaakov when Yaakov comes down to Mitzrayim, but he earns this position before Yaakov comes. He earns this position independent of Yaakov Avinu when he's on his own. And that's where he has the children. He has the children before Yaakov comes. He has the children not as Einaklech of Yaakov Avinu, but he has the children as he's living his life on a parallel track to Yaakov Avinu in Eretz Mitzrayim. But it gives us a hasada. It gives us something to recognize. To realize that, you know, on the one hand, it's very, very difficult to triumph over Esav in this world. And we need a Yaakov Avinu who's Yeshiva Holim, who's removed from it. And to the fusion, you know, of that world of the spirit with the world of physicality and the consciousness of the physicality is easier said than done. But at the same time, as long as we're living in a world where Esav prevails, where Yaakov bowed down to Esav, it's incomplete. The one who makes that happen, the Yosef HaTzadik who makes that happen, the Yosef HaTzadik who masters every aspect of the physical world, the grain and the grapes and the kingdoms and everything else, he can't just be, you know, some unfolding future of the Jewish people. He has to be put up to be what the core of the Jewish people fundamentally need to be. There's a gap, a reality gap, between what we're supposed to be and what we end up being. What should have happened one generation, it takes a future generation technically to produce. But it has to be as if it was the original generation. I think this is some of the complexity of this message of the first Aliyah of Parshas Vayechi. Just think about this. Yaakov versus Vayesh Vayesh Vayeshana. For 17 years, Yosef was Yaakov's child. For 17 years, Yaakov was Yosef's child. They're equals. They're put parallel to each other. They have to work together. The vision of the pure spirituality and of the applied spirituality to physicality have to, in the end, one has to come together in order to be able to complete the picture. May we be zeicha to see the day of Hoya Beis Yaakov Eish Beis Yosef Lahava Beis Yosef Lakash, where for us we don't just live as Jews of the Spirit, pining and yearning for an Olam Haba, but where we manage to live in a world where this world itself is Emes, where this world itself reflects the truth and the strength of Yaakov Avinu. A world of Yavducha Amim V'Yishtachavul Chol Humim, not for the sake of our power, but for the sake of the power of truth and of the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being brought to bear in every corner of the world. Kenei Yiratzon B'Mehera V'Yameinu.
Amen. Thank you.